Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. Today we pay our respects to veterans, past, present, and future. Remembrance Day is how it is called, or Armistice Day, or Veterans Day. It is a memorial in commemoration of World War I, which ended on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, way back in 1918. Now, today in England, as the clock struck 11 a.m., and as millions of Britons fell silent in respect for the war dead, Islamic protesters chanted, "British soldiers burn in hell." They burned poppies. They chanted, "Death to British soldiers." They said, "Your soldiers die are in hell, our soldiers are in heaven." But who did the police lead away? Who did the British police arrest? They didn't arrest the radical Muslims who desecrated the dead soldiers. They didn't arrest the vermin who broke the moment of silence with their words of hatred. Who did they arrest? They arrested the counter-protesters, the real British, the descendants of those who founded Britain, who were trying to shout down the radical Muslim fascists. The government arrested the only hope for Britain, the soccer thugs. This is the same government that's slashing England's military, ripping apart its Harrier fleet, destroying its aircraft carriers and its infantry. And where is the Prime Minister of England while this is happening? He's in China. Why is this important to you? Why should you, an American, care what happens to England, a socialist nation that was once a great power? Because I believe we are now the great power about to become a socialist nation. We are the ones about to be led into oblivion. We're the ones about to be arrested if we dare protest the spewers of real hatred. England's present could become America's future. Now, some took heart when conservatives won in England, but their hopes were shattered shortly thereafter. The so-called conservatives under David Cameron continued to ban Michael Savage from entering England. They slashed the military and they're kowtowing to China and, of course, protecting the Islamic fascists amongst them. And I warn you, beware of Republicans bearing false grifts. If it happened in England, it can happen here as well. But let us go back to what we're doing here in America on Veterans Day or Poppy Day. The red poppy, many of you may not know, had become a symbol of Remembrance Day due to the poem called In Flanders Field by John McCrae. Now, what do you think these red poppies that bloomed across some of the worst killing fields of Flanders in World War I symbolized with their red color? You can pretty much figure this out, right? In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow between the crosses row on row that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe, to you from failing hands we throw the torch, be yours to hold it high. If you break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields. And now what I'd like to do is I'd like everyone listening to the radio show today who loves America, who is a patriot, even if you're alone in your house, this is for you. It's not to show off. If you're in a car, I'm going to ask you to, you can't pull over, but I'm going to ask you to start flashing your headlights on the East Coast where it's dark already as we play Taps for all of the American soldiers who have died in all wars right up till now. And I want you to understand something. This is deadly serious. You may not think it has any meaning to anyone because no one can see you. It has meaning to you because if I can have you feel the strength of remembrance for those who are better than all of us, We have a hope to save America from Obama and the fascists who are trying to destroy our national pride and our national will to live. We can save America from the evil of hedge fund operators, the evil hedge fund operators, the evil hedge fund operators who gave us the real estate bubble that then burst and left us high and dry. Yes, if we can get ourselves together, we can even beat the Republicans who are now plotting to push us aside now that we put them back in power. So again, if you're in a house, please stand at attention. Please put your hand over your heart. If you're in a car, flash your lights as we play Taps for the Fallen Americans. Thank you very much. Now the Stars and Stripes Forever on the Savage Nation. As we come down off that emotional high, let's go to the Stars and Stripes Forever. I'm going to tell you how you can judge who you are. Here's how you can judge who you are. If you sneered while the Taps were playing and thought that it was just a stunt for ratings, you're an unpatriotic piece of garbage who should pack up your bags and get out of America. If, on the other hand, while the Taps were playing, you were stirred, maybe moved to tears, shuddered with remembrance of someone who died in your family or a friend on the war fields, then you're an American who I love. What can I say to you? The country is more divided today than it's ever been, possibly since the U.S. Civil War, all because of Obama and the radical socialists, both in the government and the media. We won a major victory last week, and don't you forget it. We chased those socialist bums out of Congress, and don't you forget it. Just because the vermin in the media have hushed it up, just because the rats in Hollywood have made you forget what happened last week, doesn't mean you have to forget what happened last week. We won a major victory. We saw the face of evil, and we said, get the hell out of here. Get out of our Congress. You stink it up. You're all fetid. Get out. But if you think they're through, you're wrong. Pelosi is acting right now to push through a vote during the lame duck session called the Dream Act. It's a bill that would legalize young undocumented illegal aliens. That's what old Pelosi's trying to do in her last days of power. So don't think that these superb individuals who some call Americans love America. Don't think for a minute that any of them respect the legislative process. Don't think for a minute that any of them would be moved by the music that I just played, whether it be Taps or the others. I'd like to ask those of you who are listening to the Savage Nation right now to call this show with a poignant story about a father, a brother, an uncle, a husband, a son who died in one of our wars. I'll be right back. Savage. Well, we're going to try and keep your spirits up, Buckaroo, on the Savage Nation, because we have a real battle ahead of us. We've got an absentee landlord for a president who, instead of being here in America for Veterans Day, is over there instead of over here. So we got to do it ourselves, as usual, on the Savage Nation. We got many callers talking about seeing lights flashing. New York, WOR, Joe, go ahead, please. Joe, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, thank God there's not bankruptcy here in America. You know, I'm on the Garden State Parkway. A lot of people flash their lights.
Now, where on the Garden State Parkway were they listening to the Savage Nation? Where, like where? What area?
Paramus.
Really? I mean, a lot of lights. Two, three, four, or more?
I would say like seven to eight.
Well, here we go, Joe. I want everyone listening to the show Now, my show is on a 30-second delay, so if you're hearing this, it won't happen for 30 seconds. It's like light years away. It's like looking at a star, looking at my show. Listening to my show is like looking at the stars. What you see is not there exactly at the moment you hear it. When I count to three, I'd like everyone listening to the show to flash their lights five times. I'm going to count 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000. Flash your lights. Flash your lights. Flash your lights. Okay, now give it 30 seconds and call me from around America if you're listening to the Savage Nation and you see like-minded patriots celebrating and remembering a Veterans Day. All of you who are listening to the show, give us reports from around the country. Now let's go to the callers. Paul in Sacramento, this is a terribly hard call, but we're going to take it. Paul, welcome to the show. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, I lost my daughter 4.5 years ago in a helicopter crash with Red Sea in Operation Enduring Freedom.
Oh, my God. She was a pilot?
No, she was on a Marine helicopter and as radio communications, and they had one Air Force person on each helicopter, and it was a mid-air collision.
Oh, my God. Well, all I can say is, Paul, I mean, our hearts go out to you. We don't know each other, but what else can you say except the polite things in a moment like this, correct?
Right, exactly. I appreciate that. I'm still fighting a war with court systems due to her daughter, my granddaughter, which we were raising beforehand, and that's really put a strain on us financially. And
well, what do you mean? Her ex-husband has the child or something? Is that it?
She was never married. She was date raped in the military, and we were raising her child while she was on deployment. And then when her the biological father found out that she was deceased, he came to our home in California with a court order and had the child removed.
Oh, my God.
To get her back because he wanted the life insurance.
Oh, doctor. Sure. It's always about money. It's awful. It's just heartbreaking. So it's a double loss for you. Boy, life has a way of really cursing the good, doesn't it?
That's what we got her back. So that's the important thing.
Oh, you did get her back. Well, I didn't know what to say. I was going to try and raise money for your campaign. Paul, let me send you a little token of my appreciation. It's nothing except it's all I've got, which is a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Stay on the line. 1-800-449-8255. If you have a story about someone who was lost or you see lights flashing and you want to call, Richard in Chicago. Rich, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I'm very impressed. I'm going down River Road, going south out of Chicago, and I couldn't believe it. Soon as the taps are playing, I see three different cars flash their light. I am so impressed that you are so well loved in this area, because I just don't believe it. We're loaded with liberals sometimes. You know, Illinois. You know,
well, here's the thing that most conservatives don't understand, but they should start to understand, that we're actually the majority. America is 60% conservative, if not more. The liberals control the media. The liberals control all of the halls of communication. And so they lead you to believe that you're the freak, you're the outsider, you don't speak for America, but the sickos, the perverts, the maniacs who hate this country are the real Americans. Don't be deceived for 1 minute. We're the majority. We're the power of this country. We threw 60 of the vermin out last week. Wait until the next election. We get rid of Obama, and then we throw out the Senate. Get rid of all the Democrats. Throw them out. Get rid of them. Throw them out. The worst Republican is better than the best Democrat, as far as I'm concerned. Anyone who's gone along with Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama in destroying our military, destroying NASA, destroying our General Motors, destroying virtually everything he touched, I call him Obama the Destroyer, as I spell out, Rich. We have a big job ahead of us, don't we? Stay on the line, copy a Trickle Up Poverty so you can plan and plot the next election on the Savage Nation. I'm giving out books all day today. How's that? It's my Thanksgiving gift to the Savage Nation for listening to this program. If you want to honor somebody, we have an open microphone to you on the Savage Nation. Anyone who died in a war, I'd like to hear from you. Let's go to New York City. Joseph, you're on the Savage Nation on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Yes, go.
Yes, I have two uncles that died in the, one in Germany and one fought in the South Pacific. My father fought in the South Pacific, 7th Infantry Ranger. And tough day today.
The seventh. You said the Rangers. They were very, very, very brave. You know that Bob Dole was a Ranger who got almost killed in the battle in Italy. You know that. But you say your father was a Ranger or your uncle?
No, my father.
Is he still around?
No, he passed away.
But how old was he when he died?
He was 77.
Well,
he come down to Reed's Hospital. He had a bad infection over there in the jungles. He had some kind of blood disease.
You know, when I was in the South Pacific collecting plants, I was warned that some soldiers picked up parasitic diseases that didn't even have a name. They didn't even know what it was in World War II, and they suffered from them. Luckily, I never picked up anything except a strong dose of conservatism. I got a strong dose of conservatism for all those years alone in the islands. Joseph, stay in line. Copy of Trickle Up Poverty goes out to you. 1-800-449-8255. Time for one quick call. San Diego, go ahead quickly. You're on the Savage Nation. Fire away.
Mike, just wanted to say down here in San Diego, everybody was flashing their lights. I'm in the military myself. I want to thank you for all the stuff you do for us.
Well, that's our job. Our job is to support those who give us the freedom to talk. Do you realize that without the military, we would have been, never mind Obama, he's only recently, but without the military, do people not understand that World War II was the most epic battle in history in terms of freedom versus slavery? Had the men not fought and won World War II, as I jokingly say, but it's eerie, most of us would be speaking German or we'd be lampshades. Did they really understand that? How does England take the Islamo-fascists spitting on their war dead without letting the English Defense League wade into them with pipes and beer bottles? I'll never understand. I just don't understand what kind of government doesn't let the British soccer thugs, who are the best in England, wade into those slimy throwbacks with beer bottles and bats. I just don't understand what kind of country it is anymore.
Savage.
Why am I laughing? What's wrong with me? Why do I feel good? So 2 days ago, a mysterious vapor trail appears at sundown off the coast of Los Angeles, and the military finally tells us what they mean by don't ask, don't tell. It means don't ask them because they're not going to tell you. And then yesterday, another missile trail is seen off the shores of Long Island. And of course, the military again invokes don't ask, don't tell, meaning don't ask us because we don't know and we're not going to tell anyway. I don't know, could it be that the saber-rattling of Obama taking the 32 warships with him provoked? Remember I said when he went, either it's a gunboat diplomacy thing to rattle his sabers to China before he gets to Korea for the summit, or it's a provocation to see what happens, and I think it was a provocation, and I burst personally, if you asked me to run a fantasy, because I have no way to know, what do I know? All I can try to do is use logic, which of course often works, incidentally, is that Obama rattled his sabers with the 32 warships and the great show of force on his trip to India, and the Chinese responded by firing missiles off our east and west coast with stealthy submarines. And the rest will be history. We're liable to be history if we have the military under Obama that we have now. You know, our top leadership is resigning in a few months. North Carolina town to accept Mexican ID from illegals. Durham City Council is getting an earful over plan to allow Mexican illegals to use a special ID card. Well, how else can you have gangs run a town? Hillary announces $150 million in aid to the Palestinians. Uh-oh. Oh, it's on michaelsavage.com. Obama concedes on upper-income tax breaks. Axelrod suggested that the administration is ready to accept an across-the-board continuation of current tax rates, marking a turnaround from the White House's pre-midterm stance. That's good for me. I'm happy, because that way I can hire another person and give away more money next year. New top Marine backs gay ban. Army cover-up of Muslim majors massacre at Fort Hood. That's all on my website. I don't want to get more agita than I already have. I got enough agita. Let's see. Hollywood actresses then and now. That shows you what they looked like when they were 21. Take a look at them now. It's frightening. I linked it up, Hollywood actresses then and now. You take a look at Julie Christie in 1963. You know, a pretty girl. And then they show her now. It's a frightening picture. But, you know, this is, in a way, it's what time and gravity does to all of us, not just Julie Christie. It's on my website, that's all. It's time for our third look at Hollywood actresses then and now. And it's linked up. You take a look at her then. Oh, wow. Blah, 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 next to the River Thames in London. Julie Christie, are you kidding? Then you look at her now. She looks like Stalin's housekeeper. I mean, but what can you do? She's had a lot of facial work, but still she looks like Stalin. She looks like an anorexic Stalin's housekeeper. It's, you know, can't they just not show themselves after a certain point? You know, at a certain point, a burqa starts to make sense. In the sense that I could see a burqa for, you know what I mean? Yeah, why not? What's wrong with a burqa for a woman at a certain point like this? Don't take it in a misogynistic way. It's not meant that way. You look at the, let's see, who else aged poorly? There's another one here. I'm trying to lighten it up. It's too painful the other way. Carrie Fisher, February 1972, age 15. I don't even know who she is. She looks like a distant cousin of mine. We could be related for all I know. Let's see. Then you click the next picture. There again, Stalin's housekeeper, part two. It's a certain familiarity. You put a babushka on these women over the age of 60, they're Stalin's housekeeper. Well, it's true. It's also true about the Ukrainian women that are coming in here. You know, the guys see them, they die. The cars turn off the road. They marry them. They wake up 4 years later, it's Stalin's housekeeper. That used to be true about certain other ethnic groups I dare not mention. Gorgeous at 15. Guys would, they lost everything in high, just crazy. They get married at 18, they had four children, they gained, they look like, 350 pounds later in 4 years. It's unbelievable. Weight has a way of doing that to you. You know the fat woman, God rest her soul, in The Sopranos? Remember her, she played the Johnny's wife? She died 2 weeks ago. It's an interesting story in a way because she was only 40-something. Her husband had died the year before. What was interesting about that story is she was not an actress. She was this real fat woman, got this. She went to an open call for actresses with her friend to give her moral support, and they picked her. And she became sort of a little movie star in The Sopranos, which I thought was a very sweet, you know, thing to happen to a woman who had no inklings of acting. And you compare all of the poor girls who were cursed with being beautiful who go to Hollywood and wind up abused by evil men. That was thrown in for the feminists amongst us. Look, one more now. Let me look at one more. She didn't age badly this way. Holly Hunter? Let's see her at March 1994, age 36. Now you click the next one to see the next. She's still pretty. Are you kidding? She's very nice. I mean, okay, look, let's put it to you this way. She's still a good-looking woman, let's say, for a fundraiser to be with. But let's leave it at that. You show up at a fundraiser, nice hair, nice nails, nice teeth, nice lipstick, nice earrings. But, I mean, beyond that, I mean, you know, let's look at yourself in the mirror. What are you going to do? Time and gravity. You think we all want to accept what happens? So it's a day where mortality comes to mind because of the Veterans Day. That's all. So I'm looking at these pictures because it's TikTok. It's National Geographic. It's the, you know, the Pleistocene. What can I tell you? A million years from now, they'll be digging up and finding you. That's all. You'll find your bones eating a corned beef sandwich somewhere. This ancient human lived in an area then called New York. He was seen eating some type of sandwich, which has, of course, disintegrated over the years. But his hand was grasping something large, so we can only assume by the structure of the bones and the distance between the thumb and the axle of the middle finger that it was a very large object that he was eating. Little did they know what it was. It wasn't a pierogi, I can tell you that. So I don't know. Do we want to do more of this sad stuff? And it's heartbreaking. Look, we're honoring the fallen, but what do you? I tell you what I want to do to go to the next step. I have a soundbite from the great movie, Paths of Glory, 1957, with the great actor Kirk Douglas, where he asks the French general, it's about World War I when the men are sent into machine guns, German machine guns, and they die by tens of thousands. And here is Douglas asking how many men he can expect to lose in the next charge of his general, Clip 22.
Sort of casualties do you anticipate, sir?
5% killed by our own barrage. It's a very generous allowance. 10% more in danger of no man's land, and 20% more getting to the wire. That leaves 65% for the worst part of the job over. Let's say another 25% in actually taking the anthill. We're still left with a force more than adequate to hold it.
General, you're saying that more than half of my men will be killed.
Yeah, more than half of men will be killed. It's like the French generals are very much like the Democrats today. They keep sending their troops to fight for Nancy Pelosi's madness, and they're falling by the wayside. The woman doesn't stop. She has no concept, nor does she care about what she's doing to her party. They understand what she has done to the party. They understand it very well, that her extremist left-wing policies, her liberal slash socialist policies, have decimated the Democrat Party, and they're moving away from her. It's a big story that you won't be reading in your local newspaper for obvious reasons. Norfolk, Virginia, Linda, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I just wanted to let you know that driving down 64, the first time we flashed the lights, there was two, and then the second time there was five, and kind of disappointing since we're military area that there wasn't more, but I did appreciate what you did. I had brothers and my husband over in Iraq, and I just think you're awesome.
Well, I'm sending you a copy of my book, Trickle Up Poverty. Thank you for calling. I would have hoped it would have been more, but I'm open. I'm like naked. You could have said there was one, I would have taken the call. It doesn't matter if there's one light, as long as there's a light in the dark. There'll be more tomorrow, you know? Dems pressing Pelosi to step aside. She'll never step aside. Never. This is a woman who you have to take her hands off the steering wheel. You have to pull the hands off the steering wheel. She will never let go. Update, Axelrod denies Obama would concede on Bush tax cuts for the wealthy. Update, GE is buying 12,000 Chevy Volts from GM. Update, China buying stake in General Motors. That's right, your friend Obama just sold General Motors to the Chinese. Oh, you didn't know that? You thought he went over there for something other than the selling out more of America? So first, he took over General Motors. I have a whole chapter on it in TUP. Now, after he turned it into Government Motors, China's buying a piece of General Motors. General Motors Company is in the final stage of talks to sell equity to longtime Chinese partner SAIC Motor Corp. There it is. Isn't that wonderful? The two government-funded automakers. So we're now a socialist country. We've tried to tell you this. Most of you who voted against Obama know that it's socialism. The vermin in the media know it, or they don't know it, and they won't tell it to you. But these are government-funded. They're socialist automakers. And so it is. So Chinese are now buying a piece of General Motors. What do you care? Conan loses one-third of TV audience on second night. He's a nobody. I mean, who watches nighttime television comedy shows? I've never watched one in my whole life. Never. Of course I know who he is. So what? I have never watched a nighttime laugh-a-thon show in my life. Maybe I watched Johnny Carson once many years ago. I saw nothing in it. I never went for those set-piece shows. Well, what's the point? Well, I don't understand who watches these things. Letterman and the other one. Why would anyone watch it? Your life is so empty, you got to watch a guy who reads jokes written for him by an ugly guy in the back room with curly hair and big eyeglasses? So, I don't know. I'm trying to move away from the sadness of the veterans who died. Did we play Victory at Sea?
Yeah.
We haven't? Play it now. Started as a small voice in the darkness. A few middle-aged people showing up at town halls to voice their disgust at the out-of-control spending and the corruption that had gripped America. Soon the town hall meetings spread. Where there was one, there was five. Where there had been five, there were 50. Now where there were 50, there became 500. Although the socialists in the American media tried to debase these people, the numbers kept growing. Ordinary men, ordinary women, shopkeepers, business owners, barbers. They put down their tools. and they went to the town hall meetings, and they shouted down the Democrat socialists. And soon these few grew into many. And soon these many grew into an army. And soon there came the Tea Parties. And soon there was the deluge against Obama the Destroyer. Is the music over? That was pretty good. I get into these states. Now play theme from Patton on the Savage Nation. That's a good one. I like that for patriotic music for Veterans Day. You see why I love radio? Do you understand it? Do you understand what radio is? The magic that you're hearing that's vibrating in the cavern between your ears? That I'm reaching you through the magic of electronics? Through the miracle of my own voice? I could never do this on television. It's impossible. It's impossible to do this on television. Impossible to make you feel the same way you're feeling through television. And that's the magic of radio. That's why it's the most powerful medium in America. More powerful than any other medium, because there's an emotion attached to this medium. It doesn't mean we don't need the internet. I wake up in the morning, the first thing right away, I look at the horrors of the world. Oh, the newspaper today in my apartment. You remember those? I had not been here for a couple of weeks because of incessant noise of construction. But I had a cleaning lady come in like 2 weeks ago. I come in the apartment. There's a rolled up Sunday San Francisco Chronicle with the funnies around it. I saved it actually with the rubber band for a museum one day. And then a part of me felt nostalgic and sad that a once great American institution had imploded and killed itself. Committed Harry Carey by spiting the family, spiting the flag, spiting police, spiting soldiers, spiting everything normal and decent in America, wrapping it up in funnies. You can wrap up you-know-what with funnies, and you know what it still smells like, don't you? Do I have to spell it out? I'll be right back.
Savage.
I want to show you another picture, a couple of snapshots of the insanity that we're all living through. You look at the Washington Post. I just linked it up on Michael Savage. There's a Marine who lost two arms and two legs, quadruple amputee in Iraq. It's beyond belief to think that a man has to live like this, what he's been through. You click on to the local San Francisco newspaper, and there's a head article, Cruise Nightmare Ends. Passengers disembark after 3 days of overflowing toilets, dark cabins, limited food with a crying woman. Now, they choose to feature the crying woman from a nightmare cruise, not a soldier who lost his arms and legs for America. Now you understand Nancy Pelosi's backyard. Now you understand the geography of left-wing madness. Now you understand what Michael Savage has meant all these years, what he's talked about, the mind that alters all. Now you understand what I mean by a reverse optic chiasma. Now you understand why I said liberalism is a mental disorder. Now you understand why I wrote Trickle-Up Poverty. Now you understand why I said, could England's present be America's future? Now you understand, child? Maybe. Maybe you'll understand what I mean. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Do you understand it? And there's not that many of them. It's just that they run the country right now, and they run the media. But there's not that many of them. They're a very small number. Vastly smaller than they would have you believe. You understand this? So you have a real fight ahead of you. And don't give up now just because you put some Republicans back in office. Now is when the fight really begins. Because I don't like what I see already. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to New York City. Rod, W-O-R, calls. Go ahead, please.
Yes. I'm a descendant of the first black set free in America, Henry Quanda, in 1764.
Wow. That's amazing.
I'm also a descendant of the first black to attend West Point and to graduate, and the first black general.
Wow.
In 1918, I had a descendant of mine. The name is Quanda. Okay.
How do you spell it, Rod?
Quanda. Quander.
Well, you should be. You must be very proud of your heritage.
And also, we also have the longest consecutive family reunion since 1926. Have never missed a year.
Where do you have it this year? Where is it coming up?
It'll be coming up in southeastern Pennsylvania, near Valley Forge, Pennsylvania.
It must be unbelievably stirring to have such a strong family history and such a strong family bond. You know, I once lived on Long Island, I don't know how many years ago, and I was amazed to look at a cemetery of African Americans that went back to the 1600s. Most people don't know that, you know, the African American community goes back right to the beginning in this country.
Yes, yes, to the beginning, to help.
To the beginning, absolutely. Most people don't know that. In fact, that community was here longer than most white people were here, by the way.
Correct. And the thing is, what I wanted to say is I've had three relatives die, and the World War One, James Quanda, he passed away. Well, he didn't. He was killed in World War One, and he owned a farm in Pennsylvania near Valley Forge Park, 10,000 acres, and he had no children. He had no children, and what had happened when he died, his wife left. His wife, you know, because, you know, there was no one to take care of the farm.
Right.
The government took over his land, what they call that, squatter's rights.
Oh, no.
And we're still fighting because the land was never sold.
Can you imagine what that land is worth today?
Yeah. And you know what the government offered us? What it was worth back then. No, you sold it.
That's a horrible story, Rod. All I can do is offer you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. God bless you. What a family. I wish I could be at that reunion with you. What a fun night that would be. When I have a reunion, it's me and the dog and a TV tray. That's what it's come down to. Everyone's in a different part of the country. No one wants to bother. No one likes turkey. Everyone's in another state of mind. But look, different strokes for different folks.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is Veterans Day. All veterans, all families of veterans, but particularly the men who have basically defended this country or died for this country. That's what it's all about. And when I was a kid, who paid attention to this as a kid? I remember in school when I was a kid in the Bronx, they gave us little red poppies on a wire. Like, I didn't even know what the poppies symbolized. Kids don't know anything. And adult liberals are the same as children in that regard. They're not evil necessarily. They're naive. Many of them are very kindly. They don't want to know from these things. They look around and they think the world has always been this way. The world will always be this way. They look around, they see a technicolor sky and people walking by and cars rolling by and planes in the sky and ships at sea, and they figure it'll always be this way. They figure, it's all nonsense. It's all jingoism. There's no need for war, they think. There's no need for war, they think. Why, who needs war? Who needs guns? Hey, I'm against the war. I'm for peace, they think. There's no one evil out there. Why, it's just those right-wingers stirring up a hornet's nest. There's no need for war, they say. Things have always been this way. Things have always been this way, they think, as they reach in their purse for the Prozac. Yeah, that's the way it is. You know, after the show tonight, I mean, I myself, what am I going to do? I'm going to sit and cry in my beer. I'm going to go out after the show. The lights will go off in the studio. I'll leave the studio. I'll put on my overcoat. It's a crisp day out here. It'll be dark, which I love. It's early darkness, which I love, because I can't stand long days, because the days are long enough as it is. The day will be gone. The night will be here. It'll be twilight in San Francisco. I'll put my collar up. I'll tip my hat down, and I'll walk out to a local pub, and I'm going to have a, I don't know what, I'll have a scotch or something tonight because it's a cold night. And what am I supposed to do about the quadriplegics? What am I supposed to do about the men whose minds are still in Iraq? What am I supposed to do about the men who are buried in Normandy? What am I supposed to do about the men who stormed the beaches of Normandy? What am I supposed to do about those men who saved us from Hitler? What am I supposed to do about the liberals who want to spit on their graves? What am I supposed to do about the Muslims amongst us in England who spit on their graves? What am I supposed to do about it? I say to myself, there's nothing I can do about it except get up every morning, brush my teeth, take a shower, and say, you know what? I'm alive, and while I'm alive, every breath counts, and while every breath counts, I'll make these breaths count today on the Savage Nation. So forgive me if it's a little off the beaten path with the Veterans Day thing, but it's a day that's very, very special for so many millions of people on the earth that I feel we have an obligation to remember the war dead. And those men, by the way, who are still taking bullets for us over in Afghanistan, whether or not you're for the war, you have to be for the troops. Because if you're not for the troops, who will be? Certainly not Obama. So again, I turn to the callers on the Savage Nation. If you've got a war story, someone in your family who sacrificed for America, we heard some amazing stories in the last hour, 1-800-449-8255. But I want to do something that we did in the last hour. I'd like to do it again. I'm going to count down. And I'm going to ask you if you're in a car. It's a little late on the East Coast. If you're in a house, in an apartment, you're alone, we're going to play Taps for the Fallen, whether it be in this war or in Vietnam or in the World War II, all of the war dead. And we're going to ask you to please put your hand over your heart while we play Taps. And I'm going to count to three. When we do that, please put your hand over your heart and remember those who died so I could be free on this radio and you could be free to listen on this radio. Will you do that? And if you're in a car and you feel like doing it, flash your lights. Maybe you'll find out there's more people than you think who think the way you do. So here we go. 3, 2, 1, play Taps. Go ahead, please.
I just looked up in the sky. I said, good Lord, if you take care of me, I'll be a good boy the rest of my life. And I'm so proud to be speaking here before you young people today. You got the whole world in your hands. You got the opportunity of a lifetime. And I believe there goes that bugle. And that's not Taps, thank God, because I'd start crying. Thank you.
Well, believe it or not, that was a World War II veteran who was speaking to a group of young troops in Virginia. I saw it this morning, believe it or not, on CNN. I was so moved by this man. It was so beautiful. And then, of course, we have our maximum leader. He's over in South Korea giving away General Motors to the Chinese. So let's now go to the Commander-in-Chief in clip two.
Now, on this day, we honor every man and woman who has ever worn the uniform of the United States of America.
Does that mean a postal uniform? Or
we salute fallen heroes.
Well, the liberals.
We keep in our prayers those who are still in harm's way.
The rest of the Democrats.
Like the men and women serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. So I want all of you to know, when you come home...
Or turn it off. I can't listen to it. There's not an ounce of sincerity in what he's saying. I'm sorry, I don't hear it. He's no different in that regard than most, politicians. So let's not, single him out for derision. He's no different. He's disconnected. That's all. Clinton used to be out of town all the time on July 4th and veterans. Remember? They're always somewhere else. Is she back, Mrs. Clinton, yet? Is she back in town? Now, here's a stirring speech for Memorial Day. For Veterans Day. This is one of my favorite. Where's the one about Christendom from Winston Churchill? what hangs in the balance. Do we have the one where he says all of Christendom's fate hangs in the balance? Oh, well, if you could get that one. Let's play clip 13 while you're looking for it. Go ahead.
We are the masters of our fate. That the task which has been set us is not above our strength. That its pangs and toils are not beyond our endurance. As long as we have faith in our cause and an unconquerable willpower, salvation will not be denied us. In the words of the psalmist, he shall not be afraid of evil tidings. His heart is fixed, trusting in the Lord.
See, now that was a voice that kept England going during the darkest hours. Now compare that to, play any Obama from today. Just there's a difference. Listen.
Nearly 37,000 Americans would give their lives in Korea. 37,000. But after 3 years of fighting, our forces finally succeeded.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Now go to clip 14 by comparison. Listen to this. You'll hear the difference when you switch over.
Wounds have been inflicted upon the Nazi tyranny and system, which have bitten deep and will fester and inflame, not only in the Nazi body, but in the Nazi mind. The boastful Mussolini has crumpled already. He is now but a lackey and a serf, the merest utensil of his master's will.
Can you imagine if we had one leader who had the command of English that this man Winston Churchill had? Never mind the use of language. A man who could use the language to inspire and derision towards the enemy. We have a leadership that won't even define the enemy. Now listen to this one. This is the greatest I've ever heard. It's Churchill on the Battle of Britain. Listen.
The Battle of Britain is about to begin. Upon this battle depends the survival of Christian civilization. Upon it depends our own British life and the long continuity of our institutions and our empire. The whole fury and might of the enemy must very soon be turned on us. Hitler knows that he will have to break us in this island or lose the war. If we can stand up to him, all Europe may be freed, and the life of the world may move forward into broad, sunlit uplands. If we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age, made more sinister and perhaps more protracted by the likes of perverted science.
Churchill in one of England's darkest moments, stirring the people up to stand up to what was coming, the Nazi delusion, the Battle of Britain. I want you now to turn to a very important story. It's on Michael Savage, linked up from the Daily Mail in London, where they were celebrating in the memory of their war dead. You want to see the faces of evil? Do you want to see the faces of hatred? Do you want to see the faces of everything evil and harmful in the world? Take a look at the Muslims who are marching, burning a red poppy and saying British soldiers burn in hell. Afghanistan, the graveyard of empires. And I'm sure that most of the slime on MSNBC would be marching with the Muslims, not with the British, remembering their war dead. There they are with their ugly faces, with signs that say Allah is our protector and you have no protection. British soldiers burn in hell. Take a look at it. You take a look at what liberalism has brought to once proud England. You take a look at this ragtag army of vermin, and then take a look at who the British arrested. You'll see that they arrested Jews with Jewish flags who wanted to fight with the Muslims. They've arrested large skinheads with crosses on their chest who wanted to fight the Muslims and stop them from debasing the memory of the dead. And then ask yourself a simple question. Can a nation survive that fights its own defense cells? Can a nation survive that is at war with itself? Can a nation survive that has an autoimmune disease of this nature? You see, the soldiers and the airmen and the Marines and the police are the defense cells of a society. And then when you have a group, you want to put it in the cellular context, that attack the soldiers first verbally and then another way, they are the invader. They are the virus. Now, when you have a virus or a bacteria or other kind of microbe invading a body, your defense cells rush to engulf the invader, to dissolve the invader. But what happens when a body starts to attack not the invading virus or bacteria, but its own white cells, its own defense cells, is the body gets an autoimmune disease of many different kinds. Right now, England is in an almost terminal situation with an autoimmune disease of liberalism, socialism, that will probably kill the patient. America is in the rather early stages of this autoimmune disease called socialism or liberalism. And we are the defense cells. Think about it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Many people think that the best way to escape war is to dwell upon its horrors and to imprint them vividly upon the minds of the younger generation. They flaunt the grisly photographs before their eyes. They fill their ears with tales of carnage. They dilate upon the ineptitude of generals and admirals. They denounce the crime and insensate folly of human strife.
All the stories have been told of kings in days of old, but there's no England now.
This morning, I had another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler.
All the wars that were won or lost somehow don't seem to matter very much anymore.
And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine.
All the lies we were told, all the lives of the people running round their castles are burned.
The German Führer and Chancellor and the British Prime Minister have had a further meeting today.
I see change, the inside, we're the same.
But the question of Anglo-German relations is of the first importance for the two countries and for Europe. Never to go to war with one another again.
So he will have to break up in this island.
Living this way each day is a dream. What am I? What are we supposed to be?
Or lose the war.
Living on a thin line.
The battle of Britain is about to begin.
Does it matter much? Does it matter much to you? Does it ever really matter? Yes, it really, really matters. Living on a thin line.
We regard the agreement signed last night and the Anglo-German naval agreement as symbolic of the desire of our two peoples.
Now all this teaching ought to be very useful in preventing us from attacking or invading any other country, if anyone wished to do so. But how would it help us if we were attacked or invaded ourselves? That is the question we have to ask.
Living on a thin line.
Upon this battle depends the survival of Christian civilization. Upon it depends our own British life and the long continuity of our institutions and our empire.
Savage.
Savage.
60 years later, a friendship that was forged in a war has become an alliance that has led to greater security and untold progress, not only in the Republic of Korea, but throughout Asia. That is something that everyone here can be extraordinarily proud of. There is another path available to North Korea.
All right, let's stop here. Look, let's put it this way. He has a wonderful voice, a very, very articulate, wonderful, excellent speech, but it doesn't move anybody. Why is it that a man like Obama, who came with such promise and had such a tremendous speaking ability, has been seen to be a hollow man? I think the answer is because he's a hollow man. So let's go to the callers. Debbie in New York on WOR. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for doing this show. I cannot thank you enough. I am the daughter of a Marine who did two tours of duty in Vietnam, a decorated Vietnam War hero. I spent the afternoon with greatness. I took my two young children to New York City to witness the Veterans Day Parade, and there were a good number of people there, but perhaps not enough. And I called to thank you for the good work you're doing. You said, what can you do for that quadriplegic? I think you're doing your bit, Michael. I do. I think that you are a voice keeping this day special. It's more than a 30% coupon at some store. This is for those men and women who gave everything. And understand that our liberty hangs in the balance, and that it takes more than a nice voice and a nice set of arms on the First Lady to get this country back to where we need to go. And you understand this, Michael, and I thank you, because I am a young woman, but I do see the severity of what is coming. And I thank you for your insight.
Hold on. What do you see coming, Debbie?
I'm very upset, Michael. I spent the day today in knots, while I was clapping, saying, I'm looking at these World War II, Korea, Vietnam veterans who gave it all and sacrificed. And what I see coming is a government that's printing money, a government that doesn't understand what sacrifices were made. That this is, let's take a trip for $2 billion. Let's the focus be on me. Let me not be home for Memorial Day or Veterans Day, and let the focus be on me. No, it's not on you. You serve the people, and that's what those war heroes do, and that our commander-in-chief, shame on him, is not doing. I'm very upset about it.
Well, okay, you just spoke for America. I said a long time ago it'll be the women who save America, and I wasn't wrong. I think it was not only women, but it was a lot to do with women across America who started at the town hall meetings and then the tea parties that has marshaled this tidal wave right now, Debbie. And all I can say is thank you and stay on the line. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty as my special gift for this Veterans Day. I keep saying Memorial Day. To me, it is a Memorial Day. It means more to me somehow now than it did in the past. I guess because you've got guys coming home. I don't know. What can I say? What do I have to fill in the details? You know what it's all about. You know, something to Colin Powell's credit, he said that there's more being demanded of the troops now than ever before in history. He finally said something that was not about him. You know, I mean, I knew he'd support Obama because I felt that Colin Powell was sort of always, you know, tilting toward the liberal side, but that was irrelevant. He's entitled to support who he wants, but he finally said something for the troops. And, you know, whatever you want to say about him, the man was a real general, and he did a fabulous job in the first Gulf War, if you remember. So he came out and said the troops is more being asked of the troops than ever before. Where's Mr. Schwarzenegger? He was such an American hero. Remember him? Now, there was a man who could have led this country. That guy could have been president, when you think about it. But, all right, that's water under the bridge. Not every man who could wants to. You know what I'm saying? Not every man who could be president wants to be president. Let's get very clear about it. You know, I'll never forget a statement by Marshal Tito of Yugoslavia. Now, he was a communist. It's true. Doesn't matter. He was also a great leader of his own people. Let's put it to you that way. And Marshal Tito, at the end of the war, actually at the end of his life, toward the end of his life, with all of his power, you know what he said? He said, if I had to do it all over again, I would rather have been just an ordinary American millionaire. That's what he said. And many American men who have the capacity for leadership, have the capacity and the understanding of what is at stake, don't want to be in politics. It's not an easy thing to get into. Not today. It's worse than ever. with the blogs and the internet and one wrong word, and who needs the scrutiny, and they can't make a living, an honest living? Who wants it, right? So you get, excuse me, I didn't press the sneeze button. So you don't get the best of the best anymore in politics. What you get are the B's and the C's. You get the betas, the deltas, and some gammas. And then you wonder why the country's in the shape it's in. Everyone knows, looking at Geithner, he's a B at the best. He's a beta. He's a beta. That means he's a bad guy. He's a beta. He's over his head. He's the smartest guy in the world? No. But he's a useful tool of those who are running the country. That's why they made him Treasury Secretary. Obama, probably very smart, but how smart, we don't know. And also, we don't know whether he's going to outsmart those who put him in office. That's what frightens me more than anything, by the way. It's not that he's in office, because he's been discovered and found out already. And this last election was actually a mandate against him. If it was anything, it was a mandate against Obama and his socialist policies, in the way I analyze it, right? But Mr. Obama could turn out to be far more clever than we all think, and he could outsmart the money interest that put him in office, which has happened before in other countries. Many come to mind, where they think that they can control the man they put in power, and they find out that they can't, that he controls them. That's what worries me more than anything. You know, the private national civilian security force, just as strong, just as powerful, don't play it, as the military. That's the one that chills me to the core. And I'll make a commitment right now. If he ever creates a private national security force, well, we're going to talk about leaving the country. I'll tell you right now, because it's Hitler, it's Nazism. If Obama ever creates that private national security force that answers only to him, that is just as powerful, just as strong, and just as well-funded as the U.S. military, which he called for before the election, God only knows what's coming to this country. That's what's coming. Because why would he have said that? Who did he say it to? Where was that speech given? Does anyone know where it was given, Beowulf, when he gave that speech? Well, let's play it now for those of you who think I'm making it up. Listen to this.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
Anyone who knows anything knows what he was saying. He needs his own SS, his own SA. Now, you say, well, that was only campaign rhetoric. Well, who was he directing it at? Where did he give that speech? Why did he give that speech in public? You hear me? Don't assume that he didn't mean what he said. In the case of Barack Obama, on the outside, he's a well-dressed man. There's certainly nothing freakish or sinister looking about him. But that first impression is misleading. When you pull back the curtain and see the monstrous things Obama the Destroyer has done and is doing, you realize this president, his agenda, and his policies are to be feared because he is putting the survival of a nation on the line. Why do I say that? Well, that's on page 262 in Trickle Up Poverty of Obama's War on the Military and National Security. And I spell it out for you. Now, the reason I keep going back to my book is because I spent a year writing it. I recorded the things he actually said, the things he actually did and the things he said he is going to do. And I documented them in over 300 pages with references, because you need this document in order to avoid what's coming. There are other books that have come out that have done well. They're half the size. Basically, they're scrapbooks of ideas. There's nothing original about them. My book, Without Promotion, is the most important book of the year. It is the most important book for every conservative to have. Pardon me for being proud of it. But I have been opposed to communism all of my life, because I see the devastation that is wrought around the world everywhere communism has been tried. The worker has never benefited from a communist revolution. Never. The worker has always been sold the nonsense that after the revolution, after nationalizing after nationalization, that is transferring private business to state ownership and abolishing class distinctions, the bourgeoisie, those allegedly greedy capitalists, would be strung up and their property distributed to the poor. That is the working class. That has never happened. The worker was supposed to be the king. Instead, their property and wealth were always redistributed to the ruling elite, to the bureaucrats. Look at Cuba. that communist state where the workers have been crushed for 50 years under the thumb of Fidel Castro and remain so to this very day. Likewise, the middle class under Venezuela's Hugo Chavez remains oppressed. Have the workers benefited? Of course not. Only Castro's and Chavez's inner circles have been enriched. How can this be? Didn't Marx say, "Workers of the world, unite"? You have nothing to lose but your chains? He was dead wrong. This phenomenon is a reversal of the Marxist-Leninist theories that Obama was programmed to believe. What's more, time and again, the elimination of private enterprise created widespread trickle-up poverty instead of ushering in the promised efficiency and collective profitability that would benefit everyone. Under communism and socialism, the poor got poorer because Marxism-Leninism enslaves people, body, mind, and spirit. You might want to read that again. Contrary to what Marx taught and Obama believes, spreading the wealth around impoverishes us. This really isn't so difficult to understand. Taking money from you and me to give to someone who is looking only for a handout, a bailout, or a way out, removes our incentive to excel, to grow, to risk investments, to invent, and to dream big dreams. Why work so hard to underwrite another man's slothfulness? This is Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It's a breaking news story that will go to the point I made earlier about America having an autoimmune disease. And I talked about the enemy within, and only in America can the vermin called tort lawyers get away with what I'm about to read to you, because you're not going to believe it. An illegal alien just won $1.7 million. Now remember, he's a non-citizen. He was incarcerated for selling methamphetamine. He was in prison in California. He just won $1.7 million for untreated penile cancer. A jury just hit the state of California with a $1.73 million judgment in damages in a suit by the family of an illegal alien who died of penile cancer that went untreated during more than a year in state and federal custody. The Los Angeles Superior Court jury found state prison doctors partly to blame for the death of Francisco Castaneda in February of 2007. A separate lawsuit against the federal government is scheduled for trial in April, the family's lawyers said Thursday. And the lawyer that we know is Conal Doyle, her lead attorney. State lawyers denied that the physicians were responsible for Castaneda's death and argued that his cancer was untreatable. So, there it is. He died after the amputation of his penis in a Los Angeles hospital at his Los Angeles home at the age of 36. State lawyers argued that the physicians were responsible for Castaneda's death and argued that his cancer was untreatable. They said no, they're not responsible. But verminous lawyers for the family of the illegal alien said his life could have been saved with proper diagnosis and care. So the jury awarded the illegal alien's daughter, Vanessa, $1.5 million for the loss of her methamphetamine-dealing father and $230,000 for past medical expenses. And you wonder why the country's bankrupt? Now, the lawyer, in my opinion, should be deported. But I'm not, I'm just a talk show host. Any lawyer who takes the side of an illegal alien in a case like this, under the immediate circumstance of a nation trying to survive a bankruptcy, has to be stripped of his law credentials and thrown out of the country. Castaneda entered the United States with his mother in 1982 at age 10 after fleeing El Salvador during the country's civil war. He was convicted in 2005 of possessing methamphetamine and spent 4 months in state prison, then was held in federal detention centers while the government moved to deport him, and he applied for political asylum. But because he didn't get a Cadillac health plan, he didn't get a Cadillac treatment, the cancer that he contracted somewhere else was incurable, so they cut off the amputation. But there's no joke about a thing like this. Only in America could verminous lawyers get away with this. He was convicted in 2005 of possessing methamphetamine and spent about 4 months in state prison. Then the family of the illegal alien found a shyster lawyer, in my opinion. sued, and they stacked it with illegal aliens in the jury. And the illegal aliens, aliens went along with the lawyer, and they said, the poor man, oh, if he was only treated. If he was only treated, it wasn't the methamphetamine that he was using or where he did it. You did it. You did it. You did it to the illegal alien. You made him get cancer of the penis. Isn't America great? Where else can you come here as an illegal alien, become a drug dealer, get convicted, and then blame the state for a medical condition they had nothing to do with, and then win $1.7 million after you're dead? I think it's a wonderful country. The streets are paved with gold because the nation is paved with yolds. Yold is an old German word for fool. Read all about it on The Savage Nation. Just came out minutes ago. Linked up on The Savage Nation. $1.7 million in damages ensued by the family of an illegal immigrant who died of penile cancer that went untreated during more than a year in state and federal custody. Now, unto itself, this is such a crazy story, because penile cancer could not have been contracted within a year that he was in jail. It takes a long time for cancer to grow. Any medical expert knows that. But if you put a jury, if you stock a jury with morons, particularly illegal aliens who are here illegally, and you put them in the jury, what do they know about medicine? All I know is he's Hispanic, and they convinced him that the evil white man did this to him. Give him money, that's all. See, that's the jury system. Now you wonder why your state is broke. See, we need tort reform, but we have a lawyer in the presidency, and the California Trial Lawyers Association, and the trial lawyers, all of them put together, these tort lawyers, put them all in that cruise ship that lost power, and tow it back to Mexico. And then you'll have a nation that can recover from where it's at. He couldn't have gotten the penile cancer while in prison. It would have taken years and years and years for it to have developed. So how could he win $1.7 million? Well, the lawyer, the silk-tongued tort lawyer, said that they didn't treat him properly. They didn't give him the proper treatment. Well, what would have been the proper treatment? What would the proper treatment be for penile cancer? Note him for having cut off the illegal alien's penis too soon. They wouldn't have. See, don't you understand how the devious lawyer with a forked tongue operates? Let's say they would have cut it off. That's why they didn't treat him. There was only the only treatment was amputation. They cut it off. Then, all right, they would have screamed they cut off his ring because they're anti-immigrant and anti-Hispanic. So they figured maybe we shouldn't do it now. So then eventually they had to do it. So they do a nice suit and say, you didn't treat it early enough. And he's laughing all the way to the bank. And the daughter of the illegal now has the $1.7 million less 40% for the shyster lawyer. And you're out more money in the state of California. There must be a special place in hell for tort lawyers. There has to be a special place in hell for tort lawyers. There must be. Because we don't have politicians who will rein them in and stop this madness. That's because they own the Congress. Let's hope that when we have the cleansing that we need, when the sanitation finally is invoked in the Senate in the next election, that we will have a vigorous Congress, both House and Senate, that puts tort reform at the top of its agenda and flushes the system of these leeches and vampires. The story is sickening, and yet it's true. It is totally true on this Veterans Day here on the Savage Nation. Well, I'll be here for another hour right on the Savage Nation. Remember, for the holidays, you can shake them up by buying Trickle Up Poverty, available at bookstores everywhere. Bring it to a Thanksgiving table near you.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
and faith, sure and inviolate, that in the days to come, the British and American people will, for their own safety and for the good of all, walk together in majesty, in justice, and in peace.
Well, it's a very interesting day because today is Veterans Day. And it's Veterans Day in the United States and in England. But what does it celebrate? In England, they call it Remembrance Day, in remembrance of World War I, which ended on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month in 1918. Today in England, as the clock struck 11 a.m., and as millions of patriotic Britons fell silent, Islamic enemies within England chanted, "British soldiers burn in hell." They burned poppies. They disgraced the memory of those who died to give England its freedom. But who did the police attack and lock up? Not the Muslim fanatics. Who did they arrest? Not the Muslim fanatics who desecrated the dead soldiers. Not the vermin who broke a moment of silence with their words of hatred. Who did they arrest? They arrested the pride of England, the counter-protesters, the English Defense League, the real Britons who were trying to shout down the radical Muslim fascists. The British government actually arrested the real Britons who stood up for Britain's honor. The very same government that's slashing England's military, cutting away its Harrier fleet, eliminating its aircraft carriers, its infantry. And where is the Prime Minister of England while this happens? He's in China bowing to his new masters, just as Obama has bowed the day before. Why is this important to you as an American? Why should you care what happens in England, a socialist nation that was once a great power? Because I believe we are now the great power about to become a socialist nation. We are the ones about to be led into oblivion. We're the ones about to be arrested if we dare to protest the spewers of hatred, the enemies within. England's present, you see, could be America's future. Now, some took heart when so-called conservatives won the election in England last year. But their hopes were short-lived. The so-called conservatives under David Cameron continued to ban Michael Savage from entering England. That's right. They cut the military to ribbons, and they kowtowed to China. So I warn you, beware Republicans bearing false grifts. If it has happened in England, it can happen here as well. I'm Michael Savage, and I approve of my own monologue. Today we remember those who died for us. Let's listen to one of them, a World War II veteran who landed on the beach at Normandy on D-Day, speaking to new recruits. It's very touching.
I just looked up in the sky. I said, "Good Lord, if you take care of me, I'll be a good boy the rest of my life." And I'm so proud to be speaking here before you young people today. You got the whole world in your hands. You got the opportunity of a lifetime. And I believe there goes that bugle, and that's not Taps, thank God, because I'd start crying. Thank you.
Compare this to the hollow words of the hollow president.
"Now on this day, we honor every man and woman who has ever worn the uniform of the United States of America. We salute fallen heroes and keep in our prayers those who are still in harm's way, like the men and women serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. So I want all of you to know, when you come home, your country is going to be there for you. That is the commitment I make to you as Commander-in-Chief. That is the sacred trust between the United States of America and all who defend its ideals."
The problem is that Obama has no respect for our troops.
"At the Korean War Memorial in Washington, there is a plaque right near the inscription that lists the number of Americans who were killed, wounded, missing in action, and held as prisoners of war. And it says, 'Our nation honors her sons and daughters who answered the call to defend a country they never knew and a people they never met.' I know of no better words to capture the selflessness, generosity of every man or woman who has ever worn the uniform of the United States of America."
He certainly was never one of them, which is not unique to him as a president. But never before has there been a president as, let us say, filled with such disdain for troops as this one?
It has never been more tempting or accepted to pursue narrow self-interest and personal ambition. All of you here remind us that there are few things that are more fundamentally American than doing what we can to make a difference in the lives of others. And that's why you'll always be the best that America has to offer the world, and that is why people who never met you, who never knew you, will always be grateful to the friend and ally they found in the United States of America. So thank you for your service. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Here's the Republican John Boehner talking about how he's going to be acting when he becomes Speaker of the House.
Well, I have talked to our security folks about the security that's involved in my new role. But over the last 20 years, I have flown back and forth to my district on the commercial aircraft, and I'm going to continue to do that. I gave a speech in late September, early October, over at the American Enterprise Institute, where I laid out exactly how I intend to run the House. It needs to be more open, it needs to be more transparent, and it needs to be more accountable. And you will see from day one that I say what I mean, and I mean what I say.
What? No military jets with hundreds of dollars in booze for your friends and family like Nancy Pelosi? You know, I wake up in the morning and I see that the FBI Justice Department had made an arrest now in a man who was trying to blow up the subways in the District of Columbia, right? And every report says man arrested. Man arrested. Man arrested. You have to read the whole article to try to decipher who the man was. Why does it matter who the man was? Why does it matter what his race or religion is? Does it matter that this next potential bomber that the FBI caught was a Muslim? Does it matter or not? Do you think it matters? That virtually every case of terrorism that comes up, virtually every case of terrorism, not all, in this country, is by another Muslim trying to blow something up, a subway, a building, a synagogue. Does it matter that we notice this? Why don't they tell you this? They say the young Staten Islander now, not Muslim, not that he learned it in a mosque. The article says, all American Qaeda wannabe, Staten Island suspect into video game, says his relatives. And who wrote the article? Listen to the names of the reporters at the New York Post. Ikem Luisa Livingston, Mitchell Maddox, and Chuck Bennett. And then they say the young Staten Island male in Hawaii, you have to read the whole article until you find out he was a Muslim and that he got radicalized in a mosque. But no, that's not an important part of the story to you, I suppose. While in Hawaii, this radical visited a mosque in Honolulu a few times, but we're told he was asked not to return because he expressed radical views, said Hakeem Kwansafi, chairman of the Muslim Association of Hawaii, according to reports last night. If that's true, that's really wonderful. That's really wonderful. I'm glad to learn that. Anyway, there we go again. Here, there, everywhere, problems. Problems. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm burned out after the book writing and the promotion and coming into the elections. But things are very dismal right now. I got to tell you, things are not very good right now. You read this. He's an all-American kid. He's an all-American kid, and he wanted to help being an all-American kid by blowing up a subway in the District of Columbia, and his relatives say he's a nice kid who was into video games? I rest my case. How many other nice kids out there are waiting to kill you or your children? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Today being Veterans Day, we have been playing and continue to play music that is fitting. Anchors Away, the Army Hymn, the Battle Hymn of the Republic. The Longest Day March, Stars and Stripes Forever. Even the Star Spangled Banner,
Thank you.
The Taps, Marine Hymn, theme from Patton, Victory at Sea, The Wild Blue Yonder, the Air Force Song, and Yankee Doodle. Today is Remembrance Day, as I said earlier. It's also known as Poppy Day, Armistice Day, or Veterans Day. And it is observed in Commonwealth countries, as we touched on, to remember the sacrifices of members of the armed forces and civilians in times of war, specifically since the First World War. The red poppy has become a familiar emblem of Remembrance Day due to the poem in Flanders Fields. These poppies bloomed across some of the worst battlefields of Flanders in World War I. Their brilliant red color, an appropriate symbol for all of the blood spilt in the war. In Flanders Fields is one of the most notable poems written during World War I. It has been called the most popular poem produced during that period. Canadian physician and Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae is popularly believed to have written it on May 3, 1915, after he witnessed the death of his friend, Lieutenant Alexis Helmer, 22 years old, the day before. And here it is. In Flanders Field. In Flanders Fields the poppies blow between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders Fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe, to you from failing hands we throw the torch, be yours to hold it high. If you break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders Fields. And yet this simple memorial to the millions who died was desecrated today by the radical throwbacks in England. Go to michaelsavage.com and take a look at their faces. You want to see what hate is? You want to see what hate speech is? You want to see the face of evil? You want to see the face of your future unless they are stopped? Take a look at the radical Muslims, the hatred on michaelsavage.com. You'll throw up when you look at their faces. But I would ask you to do this. The headline says, Muslim protesters mar UK's commemoration of war dead, from the London Telegraph. One of the Muslim fanatics is holding a sign saying British soldiers burn in hell. Another said Islam will dominate. Another said our dead are in paradise, your dead are in hell. These are the people who were brought into England by socialists years ago. They have now metastasized into a social cancer. Download that article on Michael Savage and see what I'm talking about. I post, you decide. Does this define you, what I'm about to read to you? Thou shalt eat, but not be satisfied. And thy sickness shall be in thine inward parts. And thou shalt conceive, but thou shalt not bring forth. You know, that defines a lot of what's wrong with America today. We eat, but we're not satisfied, so we have to go to idiotic restaurants where they put absurd combinations to attract your attention. But the food stinks. And although you may be outwardly healthy and have abs, and you run and you look healthy, inside you're rotting. Your soul is rotting. And why is there so much sterility in the United States of America? Thou shalt conceive, but shalt not bring forth. Ooh, that's pretty amazing. It's almost like biblical in its way. And the godly man has perished out of the earth, and the upright among men is no more. I'm not better than you. I'm the same as you. The same as you. Absolutely the same as you. I'm just reading you stuff written by better people than me. I have to read it once in a while to keep myself sane, to realize I'm just like you. Now, here's something I have to read to you because I think it's newsworthy. It's from Zechariah. This is where I think he predicts a nuclear war and where the Bible predicts what happens. And it's against the people who are trying to smite Jerusalem. And before I go into this, don't think I'm a great supporter of every Jew in Israel or that I love every Israeli. Because I've said this before, I've never met an Israeli I liked. I got to say, I mean, up front, I like Israel conceptually, but I don't like Israelis. It's not that I don't like them on purpose, but they have to be. They come from a very tough neighborhood. They're like Jewish people from Brooklyn from the 1930s. Like, if you're trying to get on a bus with them, they'll give you the elbow and throw you off. But they have to be, because they're around worse people than themselves. So here's what the Bible says in Zechariah. It says, and this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. If that is not a description of nuclear holocaust upon Iran and upon the enemies of the Jews, I'd like to know what is. And it shall come to pass in that day that a great tumult from the Lord shall be among them. This is amazing to me. And Judah also shall fight against Jerusalem. And the wealth of all the nations around about shall be gathered together. And so shall be the plague of the horse, of the mule, of the camel, and of the ass, and of all the beasts that shall be in their camps as this plague. But the main thing I'm trying to tell you is that it's been predicted or prophesied in the Bible, for those of you who still believe in the Bible, and I'm one of them. I'm not a biblical absolutist, but that shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite the peoples of war against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. That is a warning to the man in elevator shoes from Tehran and to every Iranian out there that he is playing with fire, and fire he shall have, not from me, but from God himself. It leads right back to Obama and his war on our military, his desire to destroy our nuclear stockpile, his melting down of NASA. He is playing with the enemy, not with America. It's all in trickle-up poverty. Read it.
Savage.
I have spoken about how Obama is hurting our strongest alliances. The latest were his comments attacking Israel for building apartments in Jerusalem. Joining us now is Eric Stackelback with a report about this.
Well, Michael, always great to be here. And as we know, President Obama right now is in Asia doing a tour there. He was in Indonesia just yesterday, actually. And while he was in Indonesia, now, put this in perspective, Michael, he's in a foreign country. He took it upon himself to slam Israel. Standing in a foreign country in Asia, Indonesia, but Israel is on his mind. And why was Israel on his mind once again? Well, Israel dared to expand some housings, build 1,300 new apartments, the eternal capital of Israel. Israel dared to build 1,300 new apartments in Jerusalem to deal with the city's population growth. People, unlike here in the West, look, religious Jews in Israel have kids. They're winning the demographic battle. They have 6-7 kids per family, whereas we here in the West have 1 or 2 kids a family, call it a night. Muslims come here, hop on the welfare rolls, have 6 kids per family. Israel, on the other hand, Israel, they're having kids. God bless them. So, Michael, this is why they need to build, in a nutshell, natural growth. But at the end of the day, this is their capital. This is their city. They're a sovereign nation. How dare we tell them where they can and can't build? This is like Israel telling us we can't build in a certain section of New York City. It's madness.
Exactly.
Yet President Obama, on a trip of Asia from Indonesia, says this when he hears about 1,300 new apartments being built in Jerusalem, the capital of the Jewish people.
Play the clip.
This kind of activity is never helpful when it comes to peace negotiations. You know, I'm concerned that we're not seeing each side make the extra effort involved to get a breakthrough. Each of these incremental steps can end up breaking down trust between the parties.
Can you believe this?
Breaking trust. Israel is breaking trust. Not the repeated jihadi Palestinian attacks that are killing innocent Israeli women and children left and right. The refusal to recognize the state of Israel. That's not breaking trust. But Israel building a few new apartments in a Jewish neighborhood in Jerusalem is apparently breaking trust and hurting peace negotiations. Now, he went out of his way in Indonesia to slam Israel, Michael. And I'll tell you, I was waiting to see how the Israeli government would react and how Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, would react.
Well, how did they react?
I'll tell you. Probably his firmest response to date, I think, to Obama and to this constant Obama hectoring of Israel and of the Netanyahu government. And Netanyahu released a statement, Michael, saying pretty plainly after Obama's outburst, he said, and I quote, "Jerusalem is not a settlement. Jerusalem is the capital of the state of Israel." And he's absolutely right. And he went on in that statement. It was strongly worded. It was very firm on the part of Netanyahu. I think we have a dynamic here, Michael, where the Israeli government saw the results of the election, the shellacking, as Obama so rightly put it, of the leftist agenda.
Right, right, right.
And Israel's probably taking a step back and saying, look, this guy's weakened, and we have a lot of friends in the House. The House, Congress, is very friendly towards Israel, even more friendly now that you have these new conservative candidates coming in who were elected last Tuesday. So if I'm Israel, I'm saying, hey, this guy's weakened. Congress is behind us. Let's stand up to this constant pressure from Obama. And I think you saw the result of that with Netanyahu's response. And I think what's really telling, Michael, is that we have always been Israel's staunchest ally. Look, polls, still, there was a poll released a few weeks ago. The overwhelming majority of Americans, average Americans, American citizens, support Israel wholeheartedly. Not only support Israel, there have been polls that showed a majority supports a military strike against Iran.
Really?
Which to me is really striking because, look, you know, we're in Iraq, we're in Afghanistan, people say there's war fatigue, but yet people still say they would support military action against Iran's nuclear facilities by Israel. I think that's a fascinating result.
Exactly.
But the thing that's interesting to me is he's abdicated his role, number one, as leader of the free world, Obama, but number two, as the world's greatest friend of Israel. He's abdicated that role. So we have different people kind of filling the void right now, and I think it's fascinating.
Who is filling that void?
Number one, I interviewed about 2 months ago Jose Maria Aznar, and you and I discussed this briefly, Michael. This guy was the prime minister and president of Spain from 1996 until 2004. Unfortunately, he was voted out in the wake of the Madrid bombings in favor of a destructive socialist government, Echoes of America, 2008. But Aznar is a solid guy. He gets it when it comes to jihad, and he has started a group. This is a European leader, mind you. Europe, which is rife with anti-Semitism, anti-Israel sentiment. He started a group called Friends of Israel, and it's a very impressive group. He's got a number of former world leaders in there, a real accent on Europe, which I think is very encouraging. We need strong pro-Israel voices in Europe of all places, where that anti-Israel sentiment outside of the Muslim world is most strong and most deeply rooted in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to see a guy like Jose Maria Aznar, number one. It's good to see a guy like Gary Bauer, who's the former Republican presidential candidate back in 2000. I sat down with Gary Bauer here in Washington last week, Michael, and he also has started a new group called the Emergency Committee for Israel. Similar deal.
Who else?
Perhaps the most pro-Israel leader in the world right now is the Canadian Prime Minister, Stephen Harper. He just, in the past few days, made a very, very pro-Israel speech with some very, very strong language in support of Israel.
Wait a minute. What did it say?
He says, as long as I am prime minister, and I'm quoting, whether it is at the UN or the Francophone or anywhere else, Canada will take that stand, whatever the cost, in continuing to stand with Israel and defend the Jewish people. He went on to say, this is Stephen Harper, the Canadian Prime Minister, not just because it is the right thing to do, but because history shows us and the ideology of the anti-Israeli mob tells us all too well that those who threaten the existence of the Jewish people are a threat to us all.
Unbelievable.
God bless him. Stephen Harper, he's showing real courage here. A few weeks ago, Canada lost a bid to be on the UN Security Council.
Why?
Because all the anti-Israel countries in the UN ganged up on Canada to prevent them from getting a seat on the UN Security Council. Why did they gang up on Canada? Because of Harper's staunch pro-Israel stand.
This is unbelievable to me.
He's a guy who deserves a lot of credit. And I interviewed someone yesterday, just to wrap up, Michael, a guy by the name of David Rubin. Now, he's got a new book out called The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. Now, he is a resident of Shiloh, Israel, in Samaria, the biblical heartland. They call it Shiloh. We call it Shiloh here in the U.S. He was the mayor of Shiloh. He's a New York native. He's been in Israel for 20 years, and he is in the so-called West Bank, in the biblical heartland, surrounded by hostile Palestinian Arabs. He has quite a story to tell, Michael. His personal story is a story President Obama should pay attention to and think twice about before he comes out and slams Israel about, God forbid, building a few new apartments in Jerusalem, of all places. David Rubin, back in 2001, was driving with his three-year-old son through the West Bank, in a Jewish-slash-Arab area, driving home, when Palestinian Muslims opened fire on his car, unprovoked, completely. He was hit in the leg, wheelchair-ridden. He's fine now. He's good now. His young son, 3 years old, shot in the head.
Oh, my God.
Imagine watching your young son be shot in the head. He held his son in his arms, helpless, had to drive him several miles to the next town to get medical help. He's good now. He's fine. Thank God he recovered. He's fine. But to be there as your three-year-old son is shot in the head in an Islamic terrorist attack by the peaceful Palestinians was very jarring, to say the least, for David Rubin. And he's got a group now called the Shiloh Children's Fund. And what they do is they raise money for children, victims of Palestinian terrorism in Israel, children, kids. He said his son, for years after the attack, would wake up screaming in the middle of the night. And the mental and emotional damage, these terror attacks, that takes maybe more even than the physical toll, the emotional, mental toll. It's a really telling thing. There's nothing like going to Israel and standing there and being there and seeing the threats up close. And I'll leave you with this, Michael. When David Rubin enrolled his young son in kindergarten, he was still having the issues, and David asked the teacher, hey, how's he doing? And the teacher said, what do you expect? He's one of only five kids in this class who's either lost a family member or been involved, been the victim of a terrorist attack himself.
Oh, my God.
So five little kids in a kindergarten had all either lost a family member, a relative, a friend, or been a victim of a terrorist attack themselves. This is everyday life in Israel. This is just what they deal with every day. President Obama, are you listening? There's good and evil in this Israeli, so-called Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and it's obvious for all to see, but you don't want to see it.
Thanks for the report, Eric.
Michael, thanks again. Always a pleasure. And be sure to check out the Stackelbeck on Terror show. You can see it Verizon Fios On Demand, DirecTV, the Dish Network, and the best place, easiest place, CBNNews.com. Thanks again.
Look, Obama is losing support not only of our allies, but of the voters as well. The recent election sent a strong message that we, the people, have rejected the Marxist directions that Obama's dragging us. I suggest you learn all about it, you read all about it, you read Trickle Up Poverty, and stop him in 2012. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
On the bottom of Michael Savage, let's go from the bottom up. Let's quote Ben Franklin, 1775. They who give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Women without kids up 80% from 30 years ago. AOL reports that the women are freer. They're enjoying their lives more. They're shopping, traveling, and eating out. They don't need children. Nasty white children, who needs them? Who needs them? They can ruin your body. They can mess up your Manolo shoes. They're a mess. We don't need children. Grandmother sold grandchild for $30,000, New York City. What else is on the website? Oh, we're just scanning. Left-wing lawyers try to free cop killer on new technicality. That would be death row activist Mumia Abu Jamal. Again, they're still trying. They're reporting that bombs have killed six Baghdad Christians, sowing panic in the Christian community. But you wouldn't be interested in that. House GOP to push for school vouchers. Well, we'll see if that gets anywhere. See the article on the Army cover-up of the Muslim Major's massacre at Fort Hood. Go look at the pictures on Michael Savage. And don't forget to read this article on my website A House Republican says Bush destroyed the GOP. Dana Rohrabacher tweeted, Bush, not a class act, destroyed GOP, jailed Ramos and Compion, left us bailouts, gave more power to FedGov in China. Right on, Dana. You got it right on. Wow. Right on the money. 1-800-449-8255. Get now for Thanksgiving table. Confront liberal relatives. That would be trickle-up poverty. Don't miss it. Has another missile been fired off our shores 2 days ago in L.A.? Now 2 days later appears off the coast of New York. And the Defense Department says, don't ask because we won't tell. Huh. MichaelSavage.com. 1-800-449-8255. You know, of all the things I've done, you know what I get the most feedback on? I don't get a lot of feedback. I don't take emails, by the way. I did for years. I get 1,500 a day. I had an employee who would spend half a day, at least a half a day going through it. Most of it's junk mail and hate mail. I don't care what you send me an email. I don't want to hear what you say about me. Get your own show if you don't like it. You know, that's all I feel about it. Otherwise, have the guts to call 1-800-449-8255 and debate me. That's all. Don't send a hateful little email and don't be a little, cyber bully with your hate on the internet, because it doesn't amount to a hill of beans, as you well know. No one reads that crap. It has no impact. That's why you have no money. So you spend all your time writing little hate mail on the email on the net. Who reads that garbage? You're like a little girl, most of you, with the clicking. All you're doing is clicking your little hatred. You're like a little girl. You can't make a living, so you sit home clicking your hatred because you didn't become Dostoevsky, most of you. What I get the most calls about is the story I told about going up to the Catskill Mountains when I was a kid with my father with the rope on a DeSoto with the canvas. People love that story. So I think I'll tell the story again. But I actually embellished it a little more. We have to go back to the Bronx because the kids have to be in school. So now it's sad. It's the end of the summer. It rained up in the mountains. The summer's over. The kids hated August. It was like gloomy. July was like, oh, the summer's still a whole summer. You know what a summer is to a child. It's an eternity. Late June was the halcyon days. They were the most beautiful because you had the whole summer. July was gorgeous. And once in a while as a kid, you'd let the idea that August was going to come soon enter your mind. It's like thinking you're going to die. The thought of going back to blackboards and chalk and teachers with toilet water that gave you a migraine headache that you could puke from. So August would come and go, and then it would rain a little, and you knew you were already going back to the slum. So now comes August. Dad comes up from the city. This is now you're packing up to go home. Now here comes the DeSoto already from New York. And there's the big, I don't know why he bought a DeSoto. I think taxi drivers used them. He heard it was a great car. They don't even make it anymore. DeSoto, by the way, was a vicious conquistador. You don't know about that. You hear the language of the Hispanics is Spanish. It isn't. It's a language of conquest and imperialism, incidentally. That's the sad part. I mean, the language of the people south of the border with America is various native languages, Indian languages, and so Mayan, Aztec tongues. Spanish was imposed upon them by the conquerors, like DeSoto, but I don't want to bore you with the details. I'll have people say, oh, I'm proud of my Hispanic heritage. It's not your heritage. It's the heritage of conquest. That's all. Spanish imposed it upon you. Proper language to speak, if you're really interested in your heritage, would be the Mayan dialect, if you're from that region. That's why Mel Gibson did that great movie. Remember that great movie? What was the name of it, Beowulf? Do you remember it? Was it Apocalypto? I love that movie. It done in the Mayan language. I mean, whatever you think about Mel Gibson and his treatment of women, the man is a heck of an actor and movie director. And the brilliant chance he took with that movie in the dialect of Mayan. So, anyway, we're going home. And he puts the rope again. Now, we're not just... See, I'm a boater. But nobody in my family ever went on a boat. They didn't even go on rowboats. They were so afraid of the water. These were landlocked people from Eastern Europe. The idea of water was alien to them. The closest they came to water were whitefish and pike. I think that's the closest they ever came to actual seeing water. Now, where I get the water from, I don't know. But the idea of how to handle ropes and lines, I think I got from my father. And I don't know where he got it from. But when he would secure the line, the rope, on the rack on top of the DeSoto, over the luggage and the goods that we were taking back to New York, literally that car could have turned over on Highway 17 on the way back, God forbid. If the car had turned over and everybody in it had been thrown out on the highway, and it was upside down with the wheels spinning, they would find all of the goods intact. Nothing would have broken, not a dish would have broken. He put the goods ahead of the family. In a certain way, goods were precious because he dealt in goods. The dog would have got flung out of the window probably and lived. He would have wound up eating a hot dog somewhere in the Red Apple Rest. But the goods, I guarantee you, could have been resold a week later because of the way he secured it with those, the ropes and the knots and the triple knots and the line. I don't know how he learned it. I don't have any idea. For a landlocked guy, God bless him, Dad. I have a picture of him, by the way, right over me in the studio with a picture of my dear brother next to him and Fats Domino next to them. So he's over. Here he is standing here looking at me right from the little bungalow colony with the undershirt. Stay tuned on your local affiliate and, of course, with God's will and your listenership.
Seven.